Oh, pasta.
Hey, Daryl, have some water.
Oh, thanks. Hey, Gabby, have some water.
Thanks.
Oh, Gabby, you didn't
find your water change.
The water doesn't transport well over distances. Okay, anyway, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. We have Glendon as our guest again. Maybe, Glendon, you can introduce yourself, what you teach, and how long you've been teaching.
Hi, everyone. Glendon here. I'm a former MOE teacher. I used to teach in junior college for about 4 years and 2 years in lower and upper secondary school. And after that, I just progressed on to teaching mostly private tuition.
Thank you, Glendon, for that. And actually, a fun fact, right? Glendon used to teach the batch above me. So he's technically like my teacher. So I had some trouble deciding whether to call him Glendon or Mr. Poa. But anyway, you get it. So today we're here to talk about exam skills that really guarantee your A. And as we go about talking, you know, about preparing for the exams, you notice that exams are not just, you know, you sitting down during that period of time. It's about the pre-work, right? Revising so that you make sure you know what you're doing. And during the exam itself, what skills are there to tackle the paper? So the first question is, you know, let's talk about the difference between science and math versus humanities and what different exam skills are needed to do, you know, these different subjects. Glendon, go ahead.
I think for sciences, it's really very important to go and expose yourself to as a large range of questions as possible. So I teach biology, and for the written exam itself, now there are a large range of questions that can come up. There are some which are pretty routine, like your food test and cells, identify a diagram. Those are very common. Every year, definitely, they'll come out in certain variation or another. But the more exam papers you do, the more questions you expose yourself to, prevents you from getting a shock during the actual A-level exams itself or the prelims, because you have come across something pretty similar, and that shortens the amount of time you need to understand the question. And at the same time, it probably allows you to know what answer should be in your answer or what points to make sure are in your answer. That's the first part. So do as many questions as possible for science and math. And it's the same for practical. For science practicals, like biology, the more practicals you do, the greater confidence you get in handling the different apparatus. But now you might be wondering, but I can't practice practicals in school. Okay, how else can I practice if I'm out of school? You can still practice the questions itself, read through all of them, okay? And for all A-level practical examinations, there's generally this component where what is the source of error, how can I improve it? So the more papers you go through, the better you become at spotting what are these common errors that always come out, and therefore, what are the common answers to address those errors? And it's the same for planning. The more experiments you do, the greater you are exposed to different ways of running experiments, the easier it becomes for you to create a hypothetical planning question, or sorry, a planning procedure to answer the planning question for your actual exam itself. So that's my advice, the difference between science and math versus humanities. I am not that advanced, not that well experienced in humanities. I'll leave that to Gabby. And math, I'm not that good at math. Neither do I teach math, but maybe I'll let Daryl share more about math. So Daryl, on to you.
Sure. I mean, for math, if I can just share, actually, I was quite good at math, but even though I don't teach math, I teach science now. But the main thing that I realized for math is really about the idea of pattern recognition. So if you're able to recognize a certain pattern, it really helps. And what I mean is that every single math problem is set in a certain way. If you can recognize what question type it is and what are the solution steps necessary, you'll start to find that math gets a lot easier. Because at the end of the day, math, there is a definite correct answer. It's not ambiguous like humanities where it's how you argue it. But for math, there's a definite correct answer, which means how do you get to that point? What are the steps that you need to take? So the final answer in math usually doesn't matter because it's about the steps that you need to take to solve it that matters. So I think in a previous podcast, I also shared the main thing is about the work examples and looking through the answer key on what are the steps and understanding why those steps are necessary. Now, another way to break it down, I would say, is to look at the mark allocation. That usually gives you a clue in terms of how much is needed in terms of the working step so that you can get to the final answer. So if it's a 3, 4, 5 marks question, it gives you a sensing of how that works. Now, if we're talking about exam skills itself, I think another very underrated one is that during the practice element, you want to start understanding how part 1, part 2, and part 3 are linked. because they are part 1, 2, 3, precisely because they are related to one another. So if you're ever stuck in math, you need to understand that whatever you have found in part 1 is probably going to be used for part 2 and part 3. If it's a separate part like a part A, part B, then you will need to consider if the previous working has relevance to your current example itself. So I'll say that those will be sort of like the key skills you need to pick up in the early stage, especially during the practice phase, to make sure that that translates to when you go and take your exam as well. I want to speak briefly about science as well, since I'm a science tutor at heart, right? So I've been teaching science for 10 years. So the main thing for science is you need to really let go of the notion of memorizing. So especially when you're at the studying phase, if you're the kind that have committed that, okay, everything I see, I'm going to memorize, can. But you need to understand that when it comes to questions where it requires memory work in an exam, questions like define, questions like recall, those questions are very minimal in the science paper. I think Glendon can attest to this. I believe it's somewhere like 5 to 10% is very minimal in terms of like component weightage, while majority of the questions will actually require you to apply. So anything that you memorize, you cannot apply because you don't understand that how the concept translates to an actual question. So every time when I teach, there's so much emphasis on understanding. Let me give you a real example. Let's use an actual chemistry chapter to discuss this. Let's talk about salt preparation. In salt preparation, what you learn are your soluble and insoluble salts. Technically, memorize it. Sure, that part is a bit fixed. But when it comes to the salt preparation methods in your titration, precipitation, and acid reaction, you need to not just memorize the steps. You need to understand when do you use which method. For example, you do titration if you're preparing a spar salt or a spar carbonate. You do precipitation when you're trying to form an insoluble salt. And when you're talking about the steps, you need to understand why the steps are necessary. For acid reaction with an insoluble metal-based carbonate, why do you need to add those in excess? It's because you need to make sure that the acid will fully react and doesn't act as an impurity when you undergo crystallization. So you realize the difference between memorizing steps and actually understanding and applying it, because the questions will require you to apply. And if you are unable to apply, that's when the marks drop off. So whenever you come across a question during your practice and your preparation phase, and you don't understand why the answer is as such, this is your perfect learning opportunity to raise it to maybe starting with a friend, see if they can explain it to you. If they are unclear, which happens most of the time, go and look for a teacher. Go to your tutor, ask the why. A teacher loves when a student asks why, because that shows that they are thinking, that they're trying to understand the concept. And the best part about understanding concept is that once you get it, you cannot unget it. That means you can't lose understanding. You can lose memory, maybe you forget, but once you understand how a certain thing works, you'll never forget. So that builds long-term value and it ensures that in the exam, you're bound to do well. So never fall into the trap for science on just memorizing. You're setting yourself up to get not a good grade, okay, unfortunately, bluntly speaking.
Yeah, thanks, Dara, for that. Actually, with that, that really leads me into my next question. You know, exam skills are more broad-based, but let's talk about the specific exam strategies that can set you up for an A. Let me just dive into the humanities side of things here. So as a humanities student, I have huge love for literature, and maybe I can just explain to you guys a little bit more about what really can set you apart as a humanities student when you're thinking about exam strategies. So the first thing you need to do is when you look at the essay question, or even when they give you the paper, right, when you flip through and they're telling you to check the paper and your questions, what you need to do is to take a look at the essay question's keywords. I don't want you to dive into the question, because you know you've seen thousands of questions before. You could mix up the question, right, and easily misunderstand the whole thing. What you need to do is highlight the keywords, think about it, unpack what they mean. And the second step, especially for humanities students, is instead of, you know, immediately writing the essay upon turning the paper, what you need to do is you need to write down the keywords and unpack how you want to set up your arguments for your essay. Okay, for example, let's say you want to start your essay, right? You could start your header with like, okay, unpacking the question, answering the question directly, and say something like, this essay seeks to firstly address argument one, address argument two, and then give your counter rebuttal, whatever it is. By structuring your essay in this manner, it really helps you to keep track, you know, of your argument so that you don't go out of point. I'm not sure if this works for the sciences as well. Maybe students can highlight keywords for their MCQs, practicals. Yeah, maybe Glendon can give us more insight on this.
Okay, so the strategies that I'll be sharing today are breaking it down into the three main exam components: your MCQ, your short answer question and essay, as well as your practical. Let's start with the MCQ first. You need to understand that A-level MCQs are very much different compared to O-level in the sense that O-level MCQs will definitely always have one very, very clear answer. A-level MCQs, in a bid to make the paper more challenging, there will be certain scenarios where there is no right answer. So my first advice for MCQ is this. If you cannot solve the answer, okay, because you cannot find the right answer, choose the answer that is the least wrong. And I say this from experience. I've seen some MCQ papers where there's clearly no correct answer, and the students are tasked to choose which answer seems to be the least wrong. Right? Next, when doing MCQ, really go and unpack and break it down. There's a lot of students who, based on habit or confidence in O-levels, hey, I can breeze through an MCQ really quickly. For A-level MCQ, you're given 60 minutes. Okay, for your prelims, you'll be given the same. And you have about 2 minutes per question. So don't rush it. Really go and analyze the question. Okay, eliminate all the options which are guaranteed wrong. And at the end of the day, you should be left with one correct answer or at max two. And then that's where you really put in the deep thinking, okay, which is the better answer. That's for MCQ. For short answer questions, A-level questions are getting tougher. And I think just now Darren mentioned, the simple questions where you are just going to be asked to define, label, state, okay, that's mainly about 40% or less of the paper. The large bulk of your exam will be testing you on 60% on how to analyze questions. So when it comes to science exams or short answer question, most students tend to just jump straight into the question. I think that is not very advisable. In fact, I tell my students, first thing you do, you ignore the questions, look at the preamble, whatever they are writing, using a pencil, because I've been informed that students now can't use highlighters for the actual exam paper. Get annotate everything that's important. Analyze it. Oh, they are saying this line. What does this line say about the reaction below? Okay, there is this particular product. Is this linked to some disease or some learning outcome? Highlight every single thing and do all the analysis there. Why is this important? So that the moment you go to the question, you don't suffer from tunnel vision. What tends to happen is when a student just jumps straight into the question, okay, the question is now asking me about this. When they go back and read the preamble, they are only scanning for things which they think is directly answering their question. And that's what I mean by tunnel vision. And because the questions are a bit more complex, chances are you're missing out key points which are available at other portions. So that's my first tip when it comes to structured questions. Don't just jump into the question, analyze the preamble. Second tip for short answer questions. If there is a graph and there's a picture, the data or some indication or some labeling from that picture, the figure or the table or the graph should be in your answer, especially if the command word is described. Here's how I explain to my students. When Cambridge sets an exam paper and they have to put a figure in, they have to pay someone to draw that figure. It's a few thousand dollars. They're not going to just pay a few thousand dollars to put something in so that it won't be used in your answer. They are fully expecting you to use their data or use something about a figure in your answer. If not, they wouldn't bother putting it there. And this is one of the common mistakes that students have for science short answer question. The picture and the figure and the data table is right there, but the students will just craft an answer without referencing it. And this goes without saying, what if they don't have the line with reference to the graph? That line there, you can take it to be invincible. Whether that line that is there or not, if there's a figure or a table or a graph, you are expected to refer to it in your answer, to quote data. When Cambridge is kind, they will put with reference to. That's all. That's them being nice. So that's for short answer questions for science. For biology, okay, there's an essay at the back. For essay questions, it would be good if you can plan your answer in advance. So don't just jump right in and write about whatever comes to mind. Spend 2 to 3 minutes, plan your points. Okay, this is a 12-mark or 25-mark essay. What do I want to talk about? How much marks do I allocate to this point? Should I mention 3 to 4 of it? So plan your essay out. And when you actually write the essay for biology, I'm not sure about the other sciences, there's this part called QWC, Quality of Written Content. Basically, Cambridge got a bit tired of marking very messy answers. So students would just vomit like 2 huge pages without any proper paragraphing, punctuation. I think they got sick of it. So now they are awarding you 1 mark for just doing primary school skills, which is proper paragraphing, leave a space after next point. So when I teach my students, how do you secure that 1 mark QWC? Is to really just, after each main idea you're writing, add a space. Leave a space there, write your next point. So in short, your whole entire essay should be a long list of very, very short paragraphs, okay, which makes it very easy for the marker to mark. And in case you never wondered who is marking your exam papers for A-levels, they are generally very experienced old British people. And when your exam paper arrives to them, it's usually near Christmas. It's very cold. It's very dull. Okay, everyone doesn't really want to mark your exam papers. So if they get a script, which is very, very orderly, very nicely structured, handwriting is pretty decent, it's very easy to mark. Okay, the marker, okay, at this particular point here, let me give you the benefit of doubt, because whatever you presented is very nice. Versus an answer where it's just two huge chunks of paragraphing, the marker is going to be, okay, let me just follow the mark scheme strictly, because okay, it's very hard to read. So do what you can for your essay questions to plan it first and write it in a very coherent and easy to read manner. Now for science practicals, this is one tip I would tell my students, which comes from analyzing many practicals. Science practicals just want you to follow instruction. And when I say follow instruction, I really mean follow whatever ridiculous instructions are on the paper. So what do I mean? There was once a bio practical which wrote there, write down the time in your lab, 1 mark. So students were very shocked. Huh? What do you mean write down the time in the lab? What Cambridge wanted was the student to write down exactly on their clock in the lab, 2:32 p.m. That's 1 mark. Okay, and when speaking to the markers who came to Singapore, I attended a marking course. They did mention a science practical's main role is to assess whether candidates can follow instructions in addition to carrying out experiment. So don't overthink it. Generally, most of the students tend to overthink a practical, and when they see a very simple instruction there, they don't follow it. Okay. So another example would be if you are doing a particular test, okay, it shows that there's a negative result, it must have 0% of something. But then on the next page, they show there's a graph that shows even when there is no result, there is like 1% of that substance there. It's like thinking, should I write in my answer 1% or 0%? Just follow the instruction and put 1%, because they really want you to follow the instructions. I've given you a set of data that shows the negative result still has 1%. Follow that. So for science practicals, really just read through everything, break down each step, analyze the questions, follow the instructions. And if you can combine steps together, that would be great. So don't go and fail each test tube one at a time with different reagents. If all seven needs Benedict's reagent, fail all seven at one time. Okay. And the next one I'm going to share about is planning. Planning, if you don't know how to structure your planning question, actually the answer is there. A planning question requires you to write instructions to do an experiment. You literally just read your exam paper, which was a set of instructions to do the experiment. So you can follow the format. Starting parts about the independent variable, dependent variable. Copy the way you're phrasing it, okay, and use that as a guide to help you answer your own planning. So don't be so scared of planning. The fun part of the question is actually giving you so-called like a helping hand. And usually the steps that you have done for the fun part of planning, Cambridge wants to tell you, hey, consider this step that you just did in your own experiment so that you can get the results. So really, they're just trying to tell you, hey, I've given you these instructions. Use these instructions to write your own instructions. So those are my tips for the strategies to approach science exams, for MCQ, short answer questions, as well as practicals. Yeah.
Sorry, I lost track. What was the original question?
Sorry, I was a bit long-winded. So people think about that.
But it's really good. Like, I mean, some of this stuff, I think if you don't articulate, because this is really only an ex-MOE teacher that has been in the system that would know all this backend information. So you've been listening. This is really the golden nugget. Yeah. But sorry, I lost track of the question.
So the question is like about exam strategies. What can set you up to get an A? It could be highlighting. It could be finding the keywords. Maybe for science, y'all can shed some more light.
Okay, I think mine would be time allocation. I really think that is so underrated. So when it comes to doing well in the exam, it's not just knowing the answer, but it's being able to do it within the time frame that's given. I think the time that's allocated for you to complete the paper is reasonable, but it doesn't really give you much extra bandwidth, especially if you're struggling and you're trying to figure it out. Usually that would mean that you don't have enough time. Now, if you're able to complete the paper within the time that's allocated, it probably means because you know your stuff. That's why when you see a question, you immediately know what to take the next steps will be, whether it's breaking down the question with a question analysis first, or when you're answering, you know what's the exact answering technique, certain keywords that should be included to make your answer guaranteed to be correct. Those comes intuitively. So it's a very interesting thing because there is like a huge spectrum. So if I can just maybe shed some light on this, the students that really know their stuff can complete the paper very fast, right? And students that are very uncertain will usually struggle with the time aspect. But then there's another group that completely do not know anything, they will also finish the paper very fast. So if you finish a paper fast and you see somebody else also finish, you don't have to worry lah. It's either they really know their stuff or they don't know anything at all. It is the bucket of students that are struggling, which is they know half their stuff and the other half they are struggling. Those are the ones that you'll find is a lot more time crunch and you are struggling. So what I recommend you to do if you want to get out of this situation, it is still the preparation work. During the exam itself, it's too late. If you don't know, means you don't know. But I'm a big believer of practice and doing corrections and reviewing the corrections. So what I tell my students is this. They start with me usually sometime in December. They work with me ever since from Sec 3 end of year to O level. I tell them that every single worksheet I give them, keep it somewhere. Right, keep it at the same place every time. Because these papers and those practices that you have done is not gone. What you want to do is to take this entire stack out before your exam, 2 weeks before, look through every single question they have gotten wrongly. Those will be the same questions that you'll be stuck with in the exam. And if you know how to start on those questions or to get it right, it means that you're really addressing a very huge bucket of marks that would have been lost otherwise, and now you're able to score it. And you yourself will be surprised how much you're improving in a very short period of time. Why? Because you have covered all of your weaker spots. So those are usually the topics that you are weaker in, uncertain about, and those are the marks that you would not have scored. And now you're able to score it. So in terms of like, how do you address this problem of making sure that you have enough time in the exam comes with preparation, especially when it comes to topics or question types that you're weaker in. The better prepared you are, the easier it will be in terms of the time allocation. There's also a group of students that tend to have this sense of self-doubt. I'll say especially when it comes to math, that when they finish their entire working ready, they pause. They're like, wow, did I make any mistake? And they go back and check everything again. While I don't think being careful is necessarily a bad thing, you need to allocate time for checking. Which means if you're done with the question, you move on. You keep going until you finish the whole paper, you secure a base amount of marks that you should get already. Then you go back to double check. You do not double check as you're doing the question, because that means later on, you might not have enough time to complete the questions at the back, which could have been easier as well. All right. And the last thing I like to share in terms of exam strategy is what I call understanding your risk reward. Now, what does this mean? So in the O-level chemistry or physics paper, there are different segments. I'm talking paper 2, section A, section B. Usually the first question in section B will be your data response question. The question will look something like a comprehension passage. A lot of data, a lot of things to read. It'll usually be a 10, at most 12 marks question. Now, that question itself provides the worst risk-reward ratio. What do I mean? In terms of time that you need to allocate to break down the question is the most. And usually what they test is something slightly out of syllabus, but is still relevant to the question. The info will be in the text itself, but there's a lot of work to be done to get that mark. And the likelihood you're going to score well for that question is actually one of the lowest. So what I advise my own students to do is that you should still attempt the question. You are being very foolish if you leave blanks, right? Because any blank could be a mark, but you attempt that question last. A paper has a set amount of questions. As much as it's labeled 1 to like 11, doesn't mean you have to do it chronologically, numerically from 1 to 11. You can do the ones that you're most confident first, right? You can do the definition questions first before you forget. And after you're done with like, I have secured my B3, let me try the 2 remaining questions that I'm less confident about to aim for my A2 and A1. That has to be your mentality when approaching a paper. So don't be that stubborn person and say, no, I can one. I confirm can solve this question. You know, especially in math, you're like, no, I'll solve it. Then you spend way too long and you compromise the later parts of your paper. You know what I'm talking about, all right? So please be smart in the exam. It is a game, right? So do strategize according to how you can get the most reward and then take the higher risk move only at the end.
Yeah, thank you, Derek, for that. I think that was actually really, really damn amazing, especially for students who struggle with time allocation. Really hope this is helpful for you. With that, let's move on to the commercial break and we'll see you in the second half.
Hi, everyone. If this is your first time tuning into our podcast, welcome. Overmark is one of Singapore's fastest growing secondary and JC tuition brand. We're located all across Singapore, including locations like Kovan, Bukit Timah and Marine Parade. If you're curious about the learning experience here at Overmark, sign up for a free trial lesson anytime. And with that, back to the podcast.
Well, anyway, welcome back, everybody, to the second half of our podcast. The front part has been, you know, so full of wisdom from Glendon and Daryl, especially because, you know, Glendon has actually, you know, been through the MOE system, seen how, you know, Cambridge marking works. Anyway, the next and very last question is, considering that during an exam, I have very, very little time. If there are questions that I don't know how to do during the paper, should I solve them, spend time, you know, securing those marks, or should I just completely give up? Or should I, like, you know, finish the paper, then come back one round? So maybe to give a little bit of context, this question is really very important because if you go in without a strategy on how to do this, you'll end up like fumbling the paper. Just to give you all guys a little funny story, I had this friend who has trouble with time management. So for his GP paper, what he did was he finished the whole short answer question segment and then that was it. Like, he just aimed to finish the short answer questions. That means the long answer question all the way at the back, right? Just completely left blank. So that's a very bad example of what it means to do time allocation management. Okay, so make sure that if allocating time, right, you finish not just the short answer, but the long answer questions also. So your time management has to handle both aspects and complete the paper. With that, I'll pass on the time to Glendon to ask about his opinion on this question. Glendon, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Gabby. So the first thing I recommend is this, which is very underrated. Most students, the teacher said, your time begins now, they do the question. Linking to what Daryl said a bit earlier before the break, the first thing any student should do is flip through all your questions. In fact, pro tip, usually before the paper starts, the examiner will say, please check your paper to see if you've gotten all the pages. That is the time when you slowly glance through and see what are the different questions that come up. Truth be told, okay, at A-levels, they cannot test you every single learning objective. It is impossible. What your school does is they try to test every single objective, okay, in your syllabus across 2 years. So if you don't know, how does a school set your EOY paper? It is, I have to make sure that across my JC1, WA1, 2, 3 promos, WA, 2, 3, as well as mid-year and EOY, right? They have covered all the L's in your syllabus. That is how many exams it takes to cover all your L's. But A-levels only has one sitting. So flip through it first. Look at which topics have come up. Then, as what Gabby said, strategize. Go and do the topics you are super strong at. And avoid the topics you know will take a lot of time. So for biology, there's this topic called genetics, where you are tasked to really go and draw a genetic diagram. And year by year, I think Cambridge is trying the hardest to make the question even tougher for that particular topic. So we tell our students, skip that first, then do other things. Especially go and do the topics, okay, which have questions that are very simple, like state, define, label. I've come across a lot of students who, because, okay, I must do question one first, question two, question three. By the time they reach the end of the paper, they have left the last few questions blank. And the last few questions were topics which were very easy, or they had simple 1-2 mark questions which they could have scored by just ticking the box or putting something there. So it's such a waste. So really go and strategize which, look at the questions and see which ones you can do first. And what Daryl mentioned, the risk-reward ratio, do the ones that you have difficulty with later. And to share a life story, I used to have this really brilliant student. Like, all the while, she's very good at biology. She's always topping the cohort. There was one exam where I think she didn't even finish one of the questions. And she still scored 80+. Okay? And that really brought home the message that you don't have to finish the whole paper to get the grade you want. And after that, I had a discussion with her, like, wait, why didn't you do that question? She told me point blank, she was saying, Mr. Hua, I am not very confident in that question, but I know the rest really well. So I just focus on doing all of that. And at the end of the paper, if I have some time, I give it a go. And she said that by the end of the paper, she didn't have that much time to go through that question. So when I was marking her 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the cover page, you will see, well, every single question is almost like full mark. Last question, 0 out of 10. But she's fine with that. And she's got 80 or 80+ in total. So that's really the message to show that read through all your questions, do the ones you can do. So go ahead and do all those simple state-defined questions first. And the harder ones, which whatever time you have left, you can give it a go. But try to make sure you don't leave any blanks. When you write something there, there's a chance you'll get some marks, lah, okay? Better than being blank. Out. So go and write something. Really go and write something. There's a chance that maybe by chance you get the marks. So yeah, that's my advice for this.
I think this was something that I also mentioned earlier, which is that there's really no need to do everything in sequence. So please choose the battles. My thought process is always securing baseline. I'll use a humanities example to illustrate the same point. So for example, in source-based questions, right, there are different levels you can hit based on what you write. So even for a source-based question, there's L1, L2, L3, L4. What I typically like to do, because time is of the essence when you're taking a humanities paper, what I'll do is I'll secure maybe a L4. And if I still have time after I'm done with all of my paper, I'll come back to write in maybe the purpose that gets me the L5. So even for humanities, you can strategize, more so for math and science. So math and science is really about tackling the lowest hanging fruit or the questions you feel most confident about. And even if there is a certain part you cannot do, you will still do the first few part until the point that you are stuck. So in science and in math, there's this thing called error carry forward, which means is that you will still get the mark even if the previous answer is wrong, as long as your working steps are correct. So keep going. Even if you're uncertain if you're right or wrong, there's still marks to be awarded, still marks to be scored, lah. So never be disheartened just because you're stuck at a certain point. You keep going, present your best answer possible. Now, I think what I would like to maybe allude to a little more is understanding the different question types and the requirements for it. So since we are talking more exams, very specific stuff, I want to really emphasize the difference between a describe question and an explain question, which is usually one of the more common things that you'll be tested in science. When we are talking about describe question, it usually involves the use of a data. You are really just talking more about what is happening during the experiment. I think, Glendon, you can elaborate on this much better later on. But explain question will require concept application. This is when the keywords that you've been practicing in your notes and, you know, during the answer key, those are the words that needs to come out, because you're talking about how a concept is applicable to the scenario or the problem that you are discussing. So when it comes to this set of questions, right, you need to understand that it's a different requirement compared to describe. And lastly, this is a very important pro tip. There are questions that will say suggest. So as I'm going through prelim papers with my students, I make sure to emphasize to them that to me, this is my own personal know-how. Describe questions, tier one. Next tier, explain questions. And the hardest one is probably suggest. Because suggest question will require a bit for you to think just one step further and to come up with a possibility. So it's not likely to be something that you have directly learned that is in your textbook. But it requires you to think just one step further or what could have caused that or the possibility of a new answer. So those questions are usually the most challenging one. But you need to understand the level in which it's pitched at. Otherwise, when you see a suggest question, you're just thinking, okay, which concept to link it to? No, that's more of like an explain question, whereby there's understanding and application. But suggest question usually means you need a bit of creativity, just a little bit, just one step further to come up with a possibility that hasn't been thought of before. Maybe, Glendon, I can just bounce this back to you to go like even deeper if you want to on the question types.
Okay, thanks, Daryl, for that. So I'll just start with describe and explain. And I'll use a real-life analogy. If I ask you to describe your favorite chicken rice, it will be, oh, the rice is very soft, very fragrant. The chicken needs to be very moist. So you're describing me features about the thing. So in science, if you describe question outright, they are looking for you to describe the data, the trend, or what you're looking at in the picture. If I can use an example from H2 biology, there's this topic called cell signaling. They will give you some picture of whatever is happening. Describing that simply is talking about the story. Or in primary school, your oral exam, you're looking, you see the picture, you tell what's happening there. So describe is all about talking about trends, putting in data, talking about the figure and data table. Explain in life, the analogy I use will be this. If you come to school one day and you're late, what will the discipline master ask you at the door? Why are you late? Then you will think very hard and you will give an explanation, which is a reason why you are late. So explain questions shouldn't be about trends, shouldn't be about data. It should be about giving a reason for the question. So that's to explain why this is this and this and this. Your answer should be, this is my reasons, these are my reasons. And that's usually from your content knowledge. And the biggest mistake that can happen is if you answer an explain question by describing trends or by explaining a described question but giving reasons. Suggest questions, as what Daryl mentioned, generically speaking, it's not in your learning objective, meaning to say you will not find anywhere in your syllabus guide, oh, you have to learn about this. But you have learned something similar to that, and therefore they are asking you to apply that knowledge into this novel setting. So the analogy I will do is this. For all of us who have learned swimming, we only learn to swim in a swimming pool, probably at a swimming complex lah, or someone's condo. But how come when we go to the beach and your friends say, hey, let's go swim in the sea, how come you can swim from Siloso Beach to Palawan Island? You didn't learn to swim in the ocean, but your body definitely knows, hey, in water in my swimming pool, when I move my hands, I can move forward. So therefore, if I apply the same principle to the sea, I should be able to swim. That is exactly a suggest question. You have the content knowledge, you have learned it, you're just being expected to apply it to this novel scenario.
Wow, honestly, that was really fantastic. I feel like this whole podcast was just full of a lot of things I wish I knew. And anyway, hopefully these guys will be really, really helpful for your, you know, getting an A, especially during exams. You know, when you panic, you can fall back on everything that Glennon and Dara have shared, the different question types, how to tackle it, and for myself as well, the humanities side of things. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe, and we will see you in the very next episode. Bye!